Welcome back to another episode of Texting Your Time, where we were texting you this time, podcast edition.
There's no other editions other than the podcast edition. This is a standard episode.
Standard edition.
Yeah. Again, audio only from now on.
This is so much easier. We just literally woke up today and we're like, oh.
And also like 30 minutes is probably a little bit easier for all parties involved.
Yes.
Including the listeners.
Definitely.
I feel like most people's commutes are not more than maybe 30 minutes.
Yeah, I feel like it's a good commute time. Like you can finish a whole thing, where if your commute is 15 minutes, it's like there and back. We're recording this on a day where we are on day one of a lake effect snowstorm. There's a warning in the forecast right now. For the next like 2 or 3 days, it's going to be a shit show.
Can I just say that the official phone emergency alert is the most annoying thing.
Oh my God. That scared the shit out of me today. I was like, like, is it necessary, guys? I'm pretty sure everybody knows the storm is coming.
Also, not everybody wakes up at 9 o'clock a.m.
No.
That probably woke a lot of people up.
Can you imagine if you had an overnight shift?
It's exactly what I thought. I was like, I would be so pissed if I was like on call and I was up all night doing procedures and then I got home, got to sleep, and then that thing woke me up.
Oh my God. I was already raging that it was so loud in my ear and I was awake. If I was asleep, you know what happens when I get woken out of a sleep.
What the fuck?
Exactly.
There was a time where Becky was at some volunteer thing and she was in like a camp. It was like a camp with like cots and like bunk beds and stuff.
No, it was like
a communal sleeping situation.
Yeah, it was. It was like it was a church mission. So I'm not religious, but I went on this like trip as a photographer to shoot. Basically it was Hurricane Katrina relief stuff. It was many years later, but we were there with a group of people from a college and university from Newfoundland when we were like going and helping people fix stuff. We were rebuilding houses. We were fixing people's sheds that had damage. We were working on sidewalks. All sorts of different things. So I was there to shoot photos and make a blog, basically. And so we were staying in this church mission.
You were responsible for the virtue signaling.
Yeah. I guess so. But I mean, obviously it costs money to bring that many people down.
Yeah.
And so obviously I think.
Yeah, you want to have some sort of element of like advertising so that like maybe more people can go on it in subsequent years.
Yeah, definitely. People go every single year and it was really cool because it was like engineers and carpenters and plumbers. It was like trades and engineers and a bunch of people, and they kind of collaborative with tradespeople from New Orleans as well.
So it was like Newfoundland tradespeople going down to help rebuild some of post-Katrina.
Right.
New Orleans.
Yeah. This is a little bit off topic, but we're trying to talk about.
Get to the point where you accosted that poor child.
Oh, yeah. I was like, why are we talking about this? So we're staying in this church mission upstairs. There's like the
communal sleeping situation with bunk beds.
It's a room with like 10 bunk beds. Mm-hmm. And so there's a bunch of like all the girls are in one room. And so one of the leaders of the group, one of the teachers or the profs, I guess, brought their kid.
She was the poor child.
She was like 12. God love her. She was a sweet kid. And so she really wanted to sleep in the room with all the big girls, right? Mm-hmm. And so she slept. She came in the room and she was in the bunk and she had just come in from Newfoundland. And we had been there for a couple of days. And so she was in the room sleeping and she had her iPad wake up alarm set for like 7 o'clock in the morning to go to school. Newfoundland time. So this is like, what's the time difference? Probably 4:30 New Orleans time a.m. And so we're all dead ass asleep. And suddenly I hear, everybody was kung fu fighting. Now, when I get woken up out of a sleep, because I take my sleep real seriously, I get pissed. I don't care who it is. You could be 10, you could be 1, you could be 45. I'm rotted. So I wake up out of the bed. What the fuck? And she's like, oh my God. I'm so sorry. And she's like trying to like scramble to turn off her alarm. But like in me yelling what the fuck at her, she's like, I was like, oh my God.
You accosted this poor child.
I felt so bad. I didn't realize it was her. I was just like, that's my immediate reaction when something wakes me up out of my sleep is to yell what the fuck. I do it at night when you like twitch and do something.
Accidentally punch you in the face.
Yeah. What the fuck? Yeah. When we had that earthquake, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's a classic Becky Peckham line.
It is. So I apologize to the child. She's no longer a child. She's a teenager now. She's actually
no, my
she's
God,
like
she's
20.
Probably an adult now.
Yeah, I think she's like an adult, which is crazy. So I'm sorry for yelling what the fuck at you. It wasn't you. It was me.
That's very big of you.
But speaking of the storm that we're having today, we were looking at ForeFlight and we were looking at the radar and we were seeing this gigantic blob of lake effect snow coming through. And of course,
it's not lake effect yet. This is just a big blob of storm coming towards us.
Tomorrow is the lake effect.
The lake effect band is very characteristic. It's like if you look at the axis in which Lake Erie is oriented, just picture it like a hose, just spraying a band of lake effect. See, this is why we don't have video right now, but I'm doing like an elephant kind of movement with my hand.
Yeah.
Like the trunk of an elephant.
Yep.
That's what it looks like. It just looks like the lake is a hose or a pipe. Just
and it's just spraying
snow.
Yeah.
All throughout this region.
Yeah, it's a little bit reminiscent of last Christmas when we were snowed in for 4 days because the lake effect band just sat over Buffalo dumped for 4 days straight.
But that one was even like, it was like basically over the course of the whole weekend, it was like just basically oscillating back and forth, north and south. And it was just spraying the entire region.
Yeah.
So like you'd get pockets of like Buffalo that were getting absolutely destroyed.
Yeah.
But then there'd be like blue sky, sunny day, like maybe like 2 miles north or south.
Yeah. And then like a few hours later, 2 miles north or south.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah. It was crazy. So anyway, of course, we were looking at the radar and checking out what the weather is going to be. It's going to be IFR and the winds are going to be really crazy. And then we thought, what the fuck is going on with the Millennial Falcon?
Yeah. Because I wouldn't want to be flying in this.
Absolutely not. This last week has been a treacherous week for weather. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because like when I think about flying, a lot of times this time of year we don't do a lot of flying because the winds are insane. It was 25 gusting 45 a couple of days ago.
Knots,
which I think is
nautical,
like
miles per hour.
Is that like 60 or 70 kilometers an hour?
I just double it. So
it's
not
probably like 85.
Going knots to kilometers per hour is roughly double. So it's like, I don't know. What did you say? 25 to 45 gusting 45.
25 gusting 45. Yeah.
Yeah. So like 50 to 100, I would guess. Kilometers per hour.
Yeah, it was really windy. And I was like, oh, yeah, I wouldn't want to be flying in this. Yeah, so this time of the year is really difficult to fly. We don't have a helicopter anymore. But we thought we'd give you guys an update on what's going on with the Millennial Falcon because we got sent a photo the other day of the Millennial Falcon stripped down, naked, no legs, no rotor, no tail. It was like the shell. Naked.
It was
jarring.
Our poor amputated helicopter.
I had a lot of feelings about it. I was like, this no longer.
Oh, you googly says 45 knots is 83 kilometers per hour.
Well, yeah, so that's pretty windy.
That is windy. Okay, so back to our amputated helicopter.
Yes, poor Millennial Falcon is now a shell.
It's just a body.
There is no upholstery.
No.
There is no windows.
It looks post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
We'll put a link to the photo on community notes or...
We'll put the link to the photo in the show notes.
Show notes.
In the show notes. BackyandChris.com/podcast, whatever episode number this is. Look for that post. Yes. You'll see the photo of the Millennial Falcon naked. It's crazy. It just looks like every other shell of a helicopter we saw at the factory tour.
Yeah. Insane.
How do you feel about seeing your bird like that?
My bird.
Looking at your bird. Naked.
Don't look at my
no
naked
legs.
Bird. Perv. Beavis and Butthead over
bird.
Here. Yeah. I mean, I knew what to expect. It's kind of like we've seen helicopters that have been deconstructed before, but it is kind of weird knowing that it's our helicopter.
Yeah.
And also we're so used to it in its current form. It was a bit jarring. But then also, it's making me excited because I'm looking forward to like what it's going to be like when it comes off the assembly line.
Yeah, it's going to be. So I have a couple of things I want to talk about in this episode, but it's basically going to be a brand new 2007 model R44 Raven.
Brand new 2007 model. That's an oxymoron.
Yeah.
In any industry except for this.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that in a second. But what is crazy to me is that, like, we will never see the Millennial Falcon as it was when we dropped it off.
No.
Like it will never look like that again.
Right.
And it's so crazy to look back, you know, as we were making our series Heading West. If you guys haven't seen it, I'll leave it in the description box for this podcast. We basically did a six.
The show notes.
Show notes and the description of this podcast.
Right.
Link to Heading West is a 6-part helicopter series where we flew the Millennial Falcon, our helicopter, across the country to get it overhauled. So it was basically due for its 4,400 hour overhaul. Every 2,200 flight hours, the helicopter needs to have some sort of things rebuilt, replaced. There's a lot of obviously moving parts that need to be, you know, maintenance.
That's a monumental trip.
Yeah, it was a once in a lifetime. Well, we're going to have to do it on the way back too, but
twice in a lifetime.
Yeah.
And then 12 years later.
Yeah. It was epic. It was a monumental trip. We knew it was coming when we picked up the helicopter.
But here's, it's this cruel reality of life where things and change happens so slowly over your life that it's sometimes hard to appreciate, where you've come from and what's occurred in your life. And like,
yeah,
I don't know, maybe it's like gratitude exercises that I get better at, but it's like, if I could have fast forwarded to see like that trip from the perspective of me in like, say 2015.
Yeah.
When like, I was like, oh my God, I want to learn how to fly helicopters. But then like the thought about like even just flying them was a pipe dream. But then like owning it was even more of a pipe dream.
Yeah.
But then being able to like have a job that allows me to take 3 weeks and do a trip like that.
Yeah.
And like also the side of it from, I guess, your career at that point when it was just a fledgling idea, like, oh, maybe I'll start a YouTube channel one day. That was before you even started your YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Like never in your wildest dreams would you have been like, okay, this is now my official full-time job. And oh, not only can I make content about whatever I want to do? I'm going to make a 6-part travel series, which was ultimately before YouTube. That was like something that you were really interested in doing.
Yeah.
So I think that like our minds both would have been blown.
Yeah.
And it's hard to appreciate it from that perspective nowadays because the change has been so slow.
Yes.
But maybe we should try to be better at being grateful for those things.
Yeah. I think it's always important to kind of look back on like where you came from or where you started and just really be grateful for everything you have or everything that's after happening.
Yes. Never in your wildest dreams or never in my wildest dreams is a thing that kind of keeps popping up in my head.
I remember a moment in 2015 where you didn't have a license. You became obsessed with helicopters and you were looking at the used helicopter market and you're like, oh, look, this one here, it's black. My dream is to have a, you know, a matte black helicopter. And I was like, this is never going to happen. Like, I'm looking at the costs of these and you don't even have a house. And we live in Newfoundland. And it's just like, and just things have a funny way of,
we have 6-figure debt. Yeah. Like we have a negative net worth.
Yeah.
I mean, of hundreds of thousands of dollars.
When you're severely in debt and you have not a lot of money coming in, you know, you look at something like that and you're just like, it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And then life kind of has a funny way of working out. It takes a long time. And with the things that tend to work out, there's also things that maybe you lose in the process or that don't work out in the process, but mm-hmm. you know, like losing your job and moving to Buffalo. But like with that unfortunate event came the ability to be able to own a helicopter.
I'm sure we have a podcast that links to this whole story because people are, if they don't know this story, they're like, what are you talking about? That sounds monumental.
Yeah.
And it was, but it was like 8 years ago.
It was, yeah.
Or like, no, not 8 years ago. It was like, when did that happen?
2018.
No, actually
2017 is when we moved to Buffalo.
Yeah. So it happened kind of unfolded in like late 2016. So it was 8 years ago.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to link to that story if you don't know it, cause I think we've beat it to death on our channel in this podcast.
100%. And we're kind of like moved past it. Right.
Right.
So the great thing about having a YouTube channel is to be able to talk about these things. It's almost like therapy, right?
Cataloged experience. Exactly. Therapy.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to us, for being our therapists.
Back to the Millennial Falcon. Yes. So a question I've seen pop up a lot is, why didn't you just buy a new one? Why are you doing the overhaul? Why didn't you just buy a new one? Or why didn't you just get another used one?
Can you know what?
Touch on that.
A lot of people ask me that question, like at work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because a lot of people just, and this isn't like no shade to anybody who doesn't understand the ins and outs of a helicopter. It's like, why
so
would they?
Complicated. Yeah.
But like I describe it to them in both time, cost, and complexity as a house.
Okay.
Because so what someone, a lot of people actually at work said like, oh, so did you get your helicopter work done? Because they looked at it, like when they think maintenance, they more equate it to like you go get your oil changed.
Right. Or so, you get your tires rotated.
Right. And like oil changes happen on helicopters and that can happen, you know, pretty quick. It's not like a 30-minute oil change though where you drive in, drive out.
No,
it's like usually we end up leaving it because there's an inspection rolled in. So that's regular maintenance. So usually we'll leave it for like at least overnight.
Yeah.
If not like for the better part of the week to get, because everything has to be inspected. And if they find deficiencies that needs to be fixed. So that's just regular maintenance. So that's even longer. But when it comes to like, you know, anything else, like major overhauls, it's more equivalent to having a home renovation done rather than having like routine car maintenance.
But it's not like just, you know, making over a room. It's like you bought an old house.
And you've ripped it back to your studs.
And it needs to have the plumbing done. It needs to have the electrical done.
Yes.
You might need to fix a part of the foundation. And only then can you then put the walls
right.
And then the decor. The decor is like the farthest thing down the road.
In fact, the home renovation analogy is so apt because, in again, time, complexity, and cost.
Yes.
You start finding things. Like the other day, there was like, you know, as they were ripping it apart, they're like, okay, your electrical harness has been modified multiple times for different mods. It's going to be, you know, there's some areas that are frayed. In order to bring this up to scratch, the cost would be equal to or exceed the cost of just ripping out the entire thing and just putting a new wire harness in.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay. So now we're replacing the entire electrical system.
It's like going into a house and, oh my gosh, you have like
knob and tube
wiring. Yeah. And now you need to rip it all out because it's a hazard.
Yeah.
And you have to put in all new electrical.
In fact,
a new panel.
In fact, in houses that you're replacing electrical, I don't think they're going to even remove the knob and tube.
No, they just leave it. They just disconnect it.
They'll just disconnect it and put new. This, we actually have to remove the old electric because it's weight.
Right.
It's dead weight.
Right. Yeah. So it's a bit more complicated. Yeah. That's a really interesting analogy. It totally makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And so like I tell my friends at work, they're like, oh, so you flew over and then they replaced everything. They did the maintenance. Then you flew it back. You got your helicopter. It's like, no. We're leaving it here for like, you know, 6 months to a year and a half, depending on. You know,
how complicated.
Can give you an estimate because there's so many variables.
Yeah. It's like a renovation budget going out of control. A contractor can come in and say, it's going to cost this much. And they start taking down the walls and they find asbestos and they find lead.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like, your electrical system needs to be replaced. Oh, okay. That adds $15,000 to the cost. It's like, holy shit. Now you are talking about like home renovation budgets.
Yeah.
So like, that's kind of the best analogy I can use. And they're like, and then it puts it in perspective. Instantly they're like, oh, like I was like, yeah, like here's a picture of the helicopter. It's literally a shell. They're like, oh my God. It's like, yeah, this is like the equivalent of ripping a house back to its studs and rebuilding it totally.
Yeah.
Like not rebuilding it, you're renovating it. So then the question, your original question was, why not just buy a new one? And then I say the same thing. It's like, okay, well, people do home renovations where they rip the house back to the studs because there's a lot of value of residual value in that property.
Yeah. The land and then the house itself.
Yeah. So why don't you just buy a new house instead of renovating? And it becomes very clear, oh, cost.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To buy an old house that needs a renovation is the house itself significantly lower than a new house.
Mm-hmm.
To do the renovation on an old house, significantly lower than buying a new house.
Yeah.
Of the same size.
Yeah, new construction you're going to pay a premium for new construction. The other thing is, and a good analogy again, is time.
Yeah.
While this might take... They quoted 6 months.
It's been over 6 months now.
Yeah, it's been over 6 months. We thought it was going to be a year, maybe a year and a half. And I think that's probably shaping up to be about that.
Yeah.
But in order to buy a new helicopter, you're still going to wait at least a year because their wait list is, I think, over a year long. It's this weird thing where like a brand new helicopter, we did a video on the costs of these helicopters and they published the cost of these helicopters online. This is no secret. You know, it's... Like a brand new R-44 nowadays is about $600,000.
Mm-hmm.
So our overhaul plus what we paid for the helicopter is approaching that, but we're adding a bunch of upgrades. And for that sicker price of $600,000, you wouldn't get some of the things that we are getting.
Right. So if you compare like a brand new helicopter with the stuff that we are getting
plus,
in it, you're probably pushing a million.
Plus we, no. It'll be like probably low to mid sevens, I'd say.
Okay.
But you're forgetting that we also flew this helicopter for 5 years. So all that cost is depreciated. So realistically, we're saving a ton of money when you factor in that we've flown this helicopter. Because that would be like, oh, you purchased it. Because that's the thing, something else people don't factor in is that it's like they look at it more like a sports car. You buy a sports car and then the only cost is gas and whatever maintenance. Whereas with helicopters, every hour you fly decreases the value of that helicopter proportionally.
That's why when people come and say like, oh, can you take me for a helicopter ride? I'll pay for your fuel. The fuel is the cheapest part of that flight.
Correct.
Yeah
exactly. Yeah. Like the fuel might be 90 to 100 bucks an hour. Whereas
the depreciation is like 400.
Over $200 an hour.
Why? I thought it was 400.
No, but then you've got to factor in like, okay, you're paying five figures in annual insurance costs.
Right. And then your hangar fees.
Yeah. So if you take all of the fixed costs divided over the number of hours you apply per year, then you can get an hourly cost of flight. It's again, you're getting into like these we said this is a very complex topic of helicopter economics.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on that because a lot of people, like I get a lot of messages like, oh, can we just go for a quick flight? Like, I'll just pay for fuel. And it's like, it's not like, like maybe pick you up in a sports car. Like, yeah, okay, that.
Yeah, but it's also not legal to charge people, to allow people to pay for, to pay you to fly. You are allowed to take payment as a private pilot, but it can only be their share. So if it's two of you flying, and you say your costs of this flight is costing me $400, they could theoretically pay $200, but they're not allowed. I'm not allowed to take $400 from them because that's over their fair share.
I see.
That's what the FAA stipulates for private pilots who don't, even though I have a commercial license, I'm not registered as like a Part 135. Like, I'm not like a flight operation official company, so I can't accept money like that.
Right.
But anyway, it's again, all these weird, little weird rules and stipulations, but again, going back to the analogy of the home renovation, yeah, this the helicopter getting overhauled is more like a home renovation.
Yeah. And so why didn't you buy a new, like, given, so
I'd have to wait for the same amount of time frame. And I could have, but then I would have to sell my old airframe.
Which is a hassle,
yeah.
Who wants to buy a timed out helicopter?
Well, people do.
I guess, people.
And it also becomes, because someone could have, theoretically, what, you don't have to get your helicopter overhauled by Robinson. In fact, the vast majority of overhauls are done in, like, they're called field overhauls, where like a local authorized third party maintenance hangar or operation will overhaul the aircraft at your local airfield, and they'll buy a kit from Robinson, you know, and they might be like, I don't even know how much the kits are. They're, you know, they're like, they might be like 100, 150,000, and then your maintenance hangar might charge you another amount of that, equivalent of that cost in like labor. Mm-hmm. So you might be in it all in, you know, 250, 300. And that is a cheaper way to overhaul your aircraft.
How come you decided to, I know the answers to all these questions, right, but how come you decided to go to Robinson for your overhaul?
So for me, my dream was always to just pick up a brand new helicopter off the assembly line, but that is financially prohibitive, especially if, like we said, we've got our money in this already. I don't want to go through the hassle of selling my old airframe. Plus, I trust this helicopter, even though it's getting complete, all the moving parts are getting completely replaced, and it's, for all intents and purposes, a brand new helicopter. There's something about this airframe that we trust. It's like, you look,
it's not going to be the same engine, you know?
It won't be.
Everything, like, there's no...
No, I know. But, you know, like, it's one of those things where, like, we almost have, like, a relationship with it, you know?
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's a personality. It's part of our family, right? And
right.
We've done that by naming it. And,
yes,
you know,
exactly.
You know.
Anthropomorphized it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we decided to keep it. But also, like, the fact that it's been overhauled once in 2011, it's had two previous owners. It's had a Canadian commercial operation that was using it, you know, for, I don't even know what they're using it for.
They used the shit out of it to the point where I think it got overhauled after 4 years or something, didn't it?
Yeah. So it got overhauled in 2011. So they bought it in 2007. It was field overhauled in 2011. So that's 4 years later. Now the whole calendar time on these airframes is 12 years. So that tells you they were using it extensively every day, kind of very, very heavily. And then it got bought after it was overhauled. Again, it was overhauled in the field. So they didn't do any cosmetic changes to it. They just did the bare minimum. From a cost effectiveness standpoint, that's the best way to do it. Then an outfit in Texas bought it, and they used it for heli hog hunting. So in Texas, wild hogs are like a huge nuisance to farmers. And so there's like a shoot on or a kill on site by any means necessary is totally legal in Texas.
Yeah, because they are literally taking over and ruining crops.
In most places, you're not allowed to hunt from aircraft. that's a highly illegal, like, unfair advantage that you get, basically. Like,
so if you want to shoot guns out of a helicopter, go to Texas.
Exactly, yeah. And so Texas has a law where you can basically just hunt hogs by any means necessary because they are such a nuisance and they multiply like rabbits. And they decimate crops. So it's a huge nuisance for farmers. So the farming industry and the helicopter industry have created this weird niche industry where the farmers get free pest control and the helicopter industry takes people who have always dreamed about hunting from an aircraft, which, not to be stereotypical, but there's probably a lot of people who want to do that in Texas. I grew up in Texas. I'm allowed to say that. So you get a lot of like people who really want to live out that dream of hunting from aircraft. And oh my God, lo and behold, you can pay a few $1,000 and you can go up in the helicopter for a day and you can blast hogs from the sky. Not something I'm interested in doing just because I'm not hunting and I feel bad probably, you know, like killing things like that. But there are lots of people who would be living out a dream. And they from 2011 till 2018, they basically almost timed out the aircraft. So they had a few hundred hours, they had about 400 or 500 hours left on the airframe of the 2200.
And that was like the perfect unicorn aircraft for us to buy because it was end of life. It had 5 hours left on it. We'd probably
500 hours
yeah. left on it. We'd probably be flying 100 hours a year up until overhaul.
It was five calendar years left on it.
It was affordable, quote unquote. It was within our budget.
Yes.
For buying a new helicopter. New. It was old. And then it allowed us time to figure out how we're going to pay for this overhaul.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was like, okay, this allows us, we're in it for the cheapest we're ever going to be able to get into an R-44 for.
Yep.
R-44.
For.
F-O-R. Yeah. Then it allowed us again, okay, that's 5 years. We can use this helicopter for 5 years. And then over those 5 years, we knew we had this big expense coming up on the horizon.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, now start stuffing the piggy bank and saving, yeah. knowing that this big cost was coming up.
Right.
And there's lots of ways you can pay for things. I understand that, you know, like a lot of people will finance these things. It is our philosophy that luxury items should not be financed. Knowing that that huge cost is coming up in 5 years, we've been planning for it. So that brings us to now current day. Again, we went to Robinson because we could have gone to our maintenance hangar in Pittsburgh.
And we could have also just bought another used helicopter, but we also don't know how people are caring for it, how they're flying it.
Oh God.
And that's just a whole other risk.
Buying a used anything, but especially helicopters, is a gamble.
Yeah.
Because the thing about these helicopters, and actually in current days, they've actually, the newer models of Robinsons, we always say like the Robinson helicopters haven't changed at all since the early 90s, but this is not true because they keep, for one, they keep giving service, big service bulletins and like required changes. Like one big example is like the fuel bladders. So back in the day, they realized the fuel bladders the fuel tanks were just basically sheet metal and riveted together sheet metal. And they realized that there were a lot of post-crash fires happening. So they looked into it and they realized that it's because when the sheet metal deforms, the fuel will just spill. They leak easily. So they created a new lining, basically essentially a rubberized material that creates like a fuel tank within the tank. It's like a big bag in the tank, which is a lot more resistant to compromise. So in crashes, say you were in a crash that was where the fuel tanks would normally be, deformed, it wouldn't leak fuel and therefore it would prevent post-crash fires. And the rate of post-crash fires precipitously decreased after that. So there are changes that are being done. And that's one thing, like a lot of, like Robinson gets a bad rap for like being like, quote unquote, a lot of people say they're unsafe, mostly related to the two-bladed rotor system. But the problem is that you've got a lot of selection bias because most of the helicopters flown by Robinson are going to be flown by them being the most affordable.
And they're also the most popular in the world.
Right. So by the sheer numbers, there's way more people flying them.
And way more new pilots.
But then you look at like the low time pilots, most your training's done on them. So you have most of your low time pilots, most private owners who are going to get into a Robinson because they're the most affordable. So you have the least experienced pilots flying the most of these helicopters. You're probably going to have a skew of the statistics. Yeah. And I'm not a statistician, but I don't know how you would account for that. But with that said, I don't know if you could from a statistically valid ways, because the numbers are so low on the other helicopters and they're being used for such different missions.
Right. And so the cost is like two or three times.
Like
more.
It doesn't make sense to try to compare like a private pilot, like us doing adventures or, cowboys who are just like, I'm using this as a fun toy. Yeehaw. Let's just kind of
like even for crop dusting or whatever.
But comparing that to air ambulance missions or like search and rescue, like stuff that's like highly regulated, but things are like highly, regulated, I guess,
require a lot of experience, more hours.
Right. So it's kind of like apples to oranges, but I digress. We were talking about these helicopters changing. One of the changes to the helicopter that the newer ones are they have these enunciators, that will look at exceedances. Like, did you, exceed a tolerance on some certain parameter? And so like, you don't know if someone oversped their rotor on the used older aircrafts. It's all kind of honor system, and it's did they see it? A, did they see the RPM go above the red line? And B, did they report it to their maintenance facility? And C, did their maintenance facility do the proper inspection? So right. All of this is on like kind of the honor system. And then there's even the Hobbs meter is a hard thing, an hour meter basically, which ticks off. It's literally counts the number of hours. But you even hear about like some people in other countries, like, you know, disconnecting the Hobbs meter and getting extra hours.
Yeah, oh Becky's, my God.
Becky's eyes just lit up.
I love safety. So this is horrifying.
Yes. So like, or like, you know, like actually like lying on the Hobbs meter is huge. That's a big issue. And there are, people have alleged that other places have done that. Australia. And there's a lot of like, they're seeing like maybe crashes that are, I've heard through the grapevine that like, oh, there's more crashes. And then some of these like safety restrictions or safety policies that Robinson has initiated has been based on people pushing the limits.
Right.
So like maybe like these wouldn't even have been issues if they had adhered to the actual hour limits, if they didn't push the hour limits. So like, which makes it even safer for everybody else, I guess, because it makes the everything more conservative.
But that's the reason why we didn't want to buy another used helicopter. We took the risk once and now.
Yeah.
So going back to bringing it to the Robinson factory, you wanted to bring it to the Robinson factory because it had been basically Frankenstein in the field for the last.
Yeah. Like there's a cargo hook and then like the electric starter on the cyclic, which there's a starter on the collective, but then there's a starter on the cyclic that you can use for like midair restarts. That got repurposed to be a cargo hook release. So like that now is kind of an unofficial change. And that's an example of like how they changed the electrical wiring. So now like to change that back. So that's another thing. So it'll get back to the factory configuration. It's like a brand new helicopter coming off the factory line. Whereas like, and that includes paint, upholstery, everything. So
air conditioning.
Yeah. And so that's the other thing too, a field overhaul. I was told that you can't field overhaul. Like if our model did not have air conditioning and therefore I wouldn't have been able to get we wouldn't be able to get air conditioning unless we were able to source some like totaled helicopter that had air conditioning that we could buy that module. Cause my understanding was they didn't sell that module a la carte as a sort of like field overhaul option.
Right.
But going back to Robinson,
we could do whatever we wanted in parameters of what our 2007 model Raven 2 could take.
Right.
So there's some limitations, as I understand, that some things that we talked about wanting that we couldn't have because of the limitations of the age of our helicopter and like what the console design was or something like that.
Yeah. So the other thing then is like we also have to fall within the confines of what Robinson can do because they have having strict tolerances and wanting this thing to come off the assembly line like a brand new helicopter, it incurs costs because like now all of a sudden we have like this RAM mount on top of our console and I'll just kind of, I'll just leave it there. Like, nope, it's an unauthorized hole in a part. We have to replace the part.
Yeah.
And that's cost.
Right.
Time. But again, it's the trade-off you have for wanting a helicopter that looks like a brand new factory helicopter.
Right.
And they have a brand to uphold. They don't want, because that helicopter is going to sit next to all the helicopters on their showroom ready to be delivered. So when the general public comes through and they see, oh, look at all these shiny, brand new, sparkly helicopters. Yeah. And they see, oh, what's wrong with that one? It's got like an unauthorized, it's got a hole
in it.
Yeah, it's like, no, that's part of the brand. It's kind of like Apple, where they have a very closed environment. There's more limitations. It's more, you pay for it. But damn, that thing is a brand sparkly new thing that's going to work.
Right. Okay. Before we end, because I think we're pushing on 40 minutes here.
Yep.
We say we're going to do 30, but okay, right. There's a lot to talk about with the helicopter. Because
I'm just like doing my helicopter.
I know, maybe. Should we do part two?
No, that's fine.
There's just a lot to talk about with the helicopter, right? Because there's so many specifics. It's not as straightforward as like buying a car.
Yes.
It's like a home renovation. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning of this episode, we said it's basically going to be like a brand new helicopter.
Yes.
But it's still going to be 2007 model.
Yes.
Like why? What?
Okay. So we talked about like most of the, if you could fly, like flying a 2007 model or even like a 1990 model.
It's been a running joke, by the way, on our channel. We'll just say like any issue that we had, a 2007 model. And we told the people at Robinson that they thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, like because, from like, the compass just wobbling.
To my door being broke.
Yeah, your door.
It's 2007 model.
To Becky's door, like latch being half broken and like it sucks out. You can see like a light gap there to it being not waterproof and just like rain coming in. Yeah.
Yeah.
The 2007 model was a running joke, but it was a running joke because it got field overhauled in 2011 and the bare minimum was done to make it safe, but nothing cosmetic was changed.
Yeah. So it looked.
It looked
haggard.
Yes.
By the time we did our cosmetic, updates
right.
in like 2018.
When we bought it, the year we bought it, we got it repainted and we got the reupholstered. So at least it looked nice, but it still had the quirks of a 2007 model, you know?
Yeah.
Like the radio was...
Didn't really work.
Well, like it worked, but it was just kind of like the lights would flicker on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a very...
She needed to be overhauled at Robinson.
Exactly. It's like, okay, we could do another field overhaul.
No, we couldn't have done it. No, we needed to.
We could have, but yeah, it's just like, have. It's getting to the point, it's like second overhaul. It's going to have still have quirks. I want this thing to be like no compromise.
We're going to be flying this, hopefully, knock on wood, for like...
The next 12 years.
So we want it to be safe. We want it to be, if it's going to be overhauled, we want it to be done by Robinson. We want it to be done properly. We want it to be safe.
Also, let's be real here. We're not going to fly 2,200 hours in the next 12 years.
Definitely not.
We might fly half that. Yeah. So it's probably going to get a 12-year inspection so that we can fly the rest of the 2,200 hours. So it might be 24 years.
Yeah. But anyway, back to the 2007 model. Yeah.
So they've changed their panels, like the
what
equivalent
do you mean
of,
by panel?
Of a dashboard.
Okay, the dashboard, yeah.
That's changed in shape and configuration over different models. So
the newer ones are much larger.
They are, and they have different like annunciator lights. So like there's the warning and caution lights are different. They've just changed the overall look of it and configuration. So it's still going to look like an older, if you're familiar with Robinson helicopters, like if you're a helicopter pilot, you know, oh, that's the old school, like
our dash
nine
is still
hole
gonna,
panel kind of thing, right?
Our dash is still going to look the way it
or did. Seven hole panel, whatever we've got. But our dash is still going to look the same. The instrument's going to same, but that's also another thing too, is the Garmin G5, which is that little tiny primary flight display that we have.
Yeah.
That was an unauthorized field installation that got, signed off in the field by the FAA, which so it's legit, but it's not an official install.
Right.
That Robinson offers. And they told us that we're going to put it back in a box and ship it back to you because it's not authorized for us to install it. And that was kind of like, oh shit, like we are, and then I'm gonna have to get the field to reinstall it the same way we did it before. It's like, that's kind of, it seems kind of silly. But since then Robinson has said, well, let us look into it. We agree it doesn't make sense for you to have a helicopter that has less functionality when it's brand new. But the problem is, in order to get the functionality of a primary flight display like that, that's electronic, they offer really high-end options on the Garmin product line to the point where it's like, okay, well, now you've got to get a brand new GPS. Now you've got to get this brand new instrument. Now you've got to get all these upgrades.
It's like upgrading your tires on your truck. You could either replace the tires in the same size, or you could change the size, and you have to change your wheels, suspension, brakes, like, and then it just kind of,
it snowballs. And in order to do that, like, and then like, they were like, okay, well, your electrical system, not just the wiring, but the whole electrical system would need to be upgraded to get some of these other things.
Right, so
you're
going to add
eligible.
It, you have to do it when the harness is being replaced.
So all of a sudden, even though we're paying like, you know, 15 grand for a new wire harness, the actual electrical system itself would need to be replaced or upgraded, which is, I think, cost prohibitive for anybody.
Yeah.
So bottom line is, it goes from like, okay, this field installed price that I think we paid like $3,300 for, which is like, you know, affordable in helicopter terms. Now, all of a sudden, when you add in the GPS, we add in the sparkling, brand new, high-end, top-line Garmin instruments, now is like well over 20 grand.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, that's just insane. Like, I can't add that. Let's just bring the G5 that we have in a box back to our maintenance facility. They'll install it in the field and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
So long story short, they're going to try to install it for us. Hopefully they figure it out and they get like some official thing that they can, because a lot of it comes down to certification from the FAA.
Right.
So hopefully they figure that out. Hopefully we can get that. But bottom line is, we're going to have a brand new
2007
model helicopter.
And we're going to have air conditioning, and the whole interior is going to be completely different. Like,
it will be.
We picked tan, I believe, but the whole interior is not going to be tan, and we're not going to have the leather backrest. It's going to be more of like a carpeted material, I believe, like the whole roof.
Oh, you mean like the...
like the fabric is different. Like, because originally when we got ours replaced, we got leather seats and the back rest, like behind the back seats, the firewall.
The cover of the firewall,
that was leather. And then so was the top.
And the ceiling.
The ceiling.
The paneling on the ceiling.
Robinson doesn't offer that. So it's more of like a carpeted thing. So I think the interior is actually going to be a mix of tan and gray, if I'm correct.
I don't recall. I signed off on the work order months ago.
Yeah. I think we looked at a couple of samples when we were at the factory, and I think that's what it ended up being. And they were like, this is what we offer. It's either.
But it looks nice.
It does look, it does look nice. Yeah. It is really, it's a lot different, but it does look nice. It's really tidy and neat. And I think we're getting some like accessory bars and like little quirky things that, you know, over the last 5 years that we were like, oh, it'd be really nice if we had this.
To have like USB charging up front.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or like, you know, maybe a bit of a better way to mount the iPad or, you know.
I do like my knee board, but it's one of those things where the knee board's nice, but when you look down at it, you lose your peripheral vision out the windshield screen.
Yeah.
So having it in front of you is a nice option because you can maintain it. You can see if like you're going to hit something in front when you're, you know, when you're right. looking down your map. So
yeah, for sure.
All right.
Well, that's what's happening with our helicopter. We don't have a date yet, but we're kind of working through it. And hopefully we'll have an update in a couple months on when this thing is going to be ready for us to go pick up.
Yeah, that's the big thing. It's like, when I can't plan. We have a finite amount of vacation time that I can take.
It's really tough for you because you have to kind of pick your vacation at the beginning of the year.
Right.
So it's really hard for you to do that and plan. And so we've kind of like guessed, but...
Right. I was like, okay, we'll put a couple cluster, a couple weeks here, a couple weeks here, and hopefully it falls within one of those clusters.
Yeah. If not, who knows? It might end up being the following 2025. Let's hope not.
Oh my God. Yeah. All right.
Okay. Well, thank you guys so much for listening again. If you want to find the things that we talked about in today's video, that picture, the jarring picture of the Millennial Falcon, I'll leave it in the show notes, beckyandchris.com/podcast. And we'll see you in 2 weeks for another episode.
All right.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.